to directly deal with the government printing works, but out of the presentation they're saying there's a deadline. Limpopo is now saying something else, so but you'll answer that when the time comes. I want to allow honorable members, give them an opportunity. It was a marathon of presentations. So I would take hands that you want to interact with the presentation. I'll take these hands in that chronological order. From Honorable Roas, Honorable Kanyile, Comrade Tato, Tito, coming this way. You can proceed.
Okay. Thank you, Chair. Thank you for all the presentations and the preparation. So I'll just go in order of pretty much how they were presented, and starting with the National Treasury. So the one issue that I'd like to really just get an understanding of...
Sorry, Honorable Ross, let me not take it for granted that you're asking in terms of all the presentation.
Yes.
Because I'm getting advice here that I must advise that the questions must be with regard to all the presentations that are there. And there are notes, those that relate to the specific department. So take all of them.
Thank you. Okay, so my first question from a general point of view is really we've seen the budget of Home Affairs and the presentation of National Treasury, and I see that the immigration budget is going up in a linear fashion more or less. And we were presented a few weeks ago an Auditor General report about the process that we have to handle undocumented immigrants, and it shows that the department really has a very serious challenge in dealing with that backlog. And I would have really hoped to see a portion or a specific budget put into handling that issue, because it's a very, very serious issue, and I don't see how the department's going to handle it using their current budget. So, for example, I mean, you know the stats. We're talking about 150,000 refugee appeals that now need to be expedited. I mean, yes, there's been some changes so that the people that are responsible for that can see more cases, but I can't see, without some funding and without some expanding of that program and almost doing a specific project, how are we going to do that? It's a very, very big backlog, and it creates a very serious issue, because we sit with these situations where somebody could be here for 10 years going through this appeals process, and then we speak about a refugee, but it's actually an asylum seeker, and we don't even know if they're supposed to be here. And it's causing a tremendous issue of social cohesion and damage to South Africa's reputation. Because we have these situations, we try and sort them out, and then what goes on the news is the flare-up or the violence. And so I'm very concerned not to see a specific budget allocation to deal with that issue, because of its national importance, especially... in our role as AU chair now, and the perception of South Africa in Africa, and the urgent need to deal with this backlog, because this backlog's been there since 2008. My next question is really about the Border Management Authority and how it will affect these budgets. I just want to understand, will the immigration officials be taken out of immigration into that public entity? And so then will the budget be lost to Home Affairs and go to the BMA? Is that how it works? I just want to get an understanding of that. Will the headcount go out into the entity and then free up space for more people to be appointed in Home Affairs? So I just want to get an understanding of that. Will immigration people go out into that border management? Will some of them go out? Will the posts be lost to Home Affairs? And will the BMA budget be ring-fenced for that authority, or will it be available sort of under the Home Affairs banner? So just to get an understanding of that, specifically in terms of how it will affect the compensation of earnings. You know, that obviously you're creating a new entity. Obviously there will be an increase in the number of personnel that then falls under Home Affairs. So how does that work? The other question is about the public-private partnership to modernize the six ports of entry. And I just want to get an understanding in that process, whether there's safeguards being put in place to ensure that we aren't held to ransom by any private companies that are doing business for us or holding, especially holding very sensitive information. So what are the safeguards to prevent the department being held to ransom at those very strategic points of entry? If we look at government printing works, I'd just like to understand why you're not competitive, why you're not able to be competitive against the private sector, and then to seek the special dispensation. And my other question in that regard is has there been any economic impact assessment being considered or being done? So to say, if you have to get that special dispensation, and you use Limpopo as an example, so now it might be that they will go to Limpopo and they will put up tenders in Limpopo for those printers to compete, they're more likely to get the work. And now you're saying special dispensation and we need to be competitive. So then the work goes to GPW. What happens to those businesses? Do they just die? What is the impact of that? Because it's also about, that's an economic principle as well, that ideally, let's say you're a city, you should try and spend money on suppliers in your city, because the money goes back into that economy. If you're taking it out, so I just want to understand, because I believe that a proper economic impact assessment needs to be done. So what will it do to the printing industry, and especially in areas that don't have that many private customers? Okay, my other question in this regard is the financials were mentioned. So what measures have been put in place to ensure that in the next financial year we are not going to have a repeat of financials not being delivered? What measures have been taken in that regard? And then I've just got a question about the Concord judgment for clarity. So if we're saying that the citizenship will now, you can apply for it after you're 18, then what happens before you're 18? Is that child then stateless all the way through their schooling? Because essentially, if you can't go to school without documentation or a birth certificate and that kind of thing, how will that be affected? If the child has to wait until they're 18 to go to school or get a matric certificate, for example, how does that work? And then just a final comment about the Methodist Church situation. For me, it's just a very sad situation. And we had J.P. Palouse in this very chamber with us. And you'll remember I made the comment that you are actually contributing to a lack of social cohesion in this country. Because there's a lot of information, and we will be tracking this thing to say that certain people abuse the good graces of this country and the provisions that we allow for refugees and asylum seekers to be amongst us. And this certainly seems to be the case. My concern in this regard is it would be very difficult, and I think it's happened in some of the court cases where everybody's trying to say, it's not me, it's you. It's not me and you. And clearly there's a big social issue here as well. Because the one issue is to say, it's a bylaw, you need to move. So then they move from the arcade, then they move to the church. Now they're going to sit outside the police station. And the city can keep moving them for all of eternity. So if it then becomes the sole responsibility of a city, for example, and then they move to another municipality, it comes to a point where you need to start addressing the social issue as well. Say, well, if they claim to be homeless here, we do have a responsibility to protect refugees and asylum seekers. That's part of that UN responsibility. And I believe it is a joint responsibility, as much as in a specific situation, it's causing a nuisance to the public, by all means. You do need to move those people away. It's affecting businesses, it's affecting South Africans, and we don't want that. But I certainly believe that there has to be a way where we start to address these kind of situations intergovernmentally. And we had that situation before where we had a metropolitan municipality that were approaching Home Affairs to say, listen, we see a problem developing. We see there's informal traders. We need more raids to be done here. And so I'd like to appeal to you, Minister, that really I believe we need this. We need this intergovernmental round table where we sit down and discuss people that abuse our system, that we separate people that abuse our system from genuine issues, the genuine issues of violence and that, and how do we deal with that proactively? Because at the moment we're dealing with everything ad hoc. So it's this ad hoc situation, now it's the residents of Waterkloof, then it's this, then it's that, then the people don't want to go back. And it's never a case if it can just be one person. So even in Waterkloof, for instance, there were social issues there as well. So social development was involved in that process. And I believe we do need that. We need to sit down, look at the different scenarios, look at how do we share intelligence about when there's issues brewing, especially for informal traders. It is this content brewing. That information can often come through at the city level. And then it is something that can involve the police. It is something that involves Metro Police to an extent. So all of these judgments has involved several different stakeholders having to do something. And I believe that if the government had to say, right, let us look at the situation holistically with the different role players and how do we handle these situations, then we can present a lot of the blowout that is causing a damage to our reputation. And then finally, Minister, and I don't like to do this, but we had a session at the IEC, and we asked about situations where the public comes to us. So we're public representatives, they come to us and they say, we've got a situation with Home Affairs, we haven't had any joy, we can't get hold of anybody. And we received the commitment there from the DG at the time, that yes, we can send those things through, and they will be dealt with in a reasonable time. Bearing in mind that some of us are new, so we might not know the details. But really, I have two situations that we've been chasing since July. And they both involve people that are now stuck overseas. There is one lady that's stuck in Panama. She was a missionary there. And it's taken 8 months to try and get a photograph from the embassy in Mexico to here. Her passport has expired, and I'm desperately trying to get feedback from the department. So this person is literally sitting there now without a passport, and because she can't get a photograph across, she's stuck there. It's a crazy situation that we've been chasing since July. And then there's the matter of John Middleton as well. He is in America. So he was a South African citizen. He went there before the rules about losing your citizenship when you go overseas were enacted. And again, he's been there, the situation has been on the table for 8 months, and that's just since we've been trying to sort it out. That's not the issue of how long they've been trying to deal with Home Affairs. So I'm really concerned about these two issues, Minister, because it involves families being separated now for months and people being stranded overseas. So I'd really just particularly like to ask for your intervention on those two matters. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Kim.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson. The first issue that I want to actually talk about is the issue of temperature. This room is very hot. It's extremely hot. And I remember in the past two meetings, the issue has been raised. I'm really not sure if the aircon are not serviced. If we're having a problem with our aircon, can you please find us an alternative thing? We are going to collapse here. I just want to comment on the National Treasury and indicate that as a portfolio, I can say that we were a bit relieved. I'm sure I'm also speaking on behalf of my colleagues when you have indicated that the issue of filling critical positions will receive attention in the new budget cycle, because this issue really affects the issues of service delivery in the Home Affairs in almost all provinces. We have conducted an oversight in a number of Home Affairs offices, and when we get there, we have also discovered that the issue of long queues is also caused by the insufficient number of personnel that we actually find there. Even the managers on the ground, they're actually very frustrated. So we'll be very relieved if this issue can be really given attention. Minister, I'd like to plead with you that can your department also see to it is that you adhere to the issues of turnaround time, of issuing documents of adopted children, especially when they are adopted by people that are living abroad. While we acknowledge that all children are equally important, I think we need to bear in mind that some of the children that we are actually dealing with here, they have special needs. You find that the adoption process has been finalized, but the stumbling block it is the Home Affairs. Could you please just look into that issue? On the presentation by Home Affairs, there is a slide, I think it's slide 17, that talks about Passport 2020 series, where it says the current contracted supplier, SAPI, contract ended in July 2019. On the recommendation, apparently GPW will issue a tender to find a suitable manufacturer. I want to know why is it taken the department so long after the other contract has actually expired for them to begin with the tender process. And the fourth question that I have is on the polycarbonate plan, that they are actually produced in France. The question that I have there is that when do you plan to open a plant to produce the product locally? Thank you.
Honorable Tito.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, my previous colleague has actually asked some of the questions that I wanted to ask the Minister and also the National Treasurer and the GPW. Mine is on this one, also on page 17. It is very good for you guys to go and to want to open a plant here in the local for meaning that we will get some of the local people will get jobs and all of those things. So and I think that the GPW is a entity that is sustaining itself and it's doing a very, very excellent job. So I think that the Minister must make follow-ups in terms of the other departments, why they are not also taking their services. Thank you.
Honorable Chaban, is your hand up?
Because I've done my own oversight and we have a problem in my scheme, but I've already made a written report.
Yeah, that submission was via me.
Yes, Chair, I'll do that.
Okay. Which one?
No, Chair, thanks. Only three issues which I think I want to submit. One, Chair, is that both the institutions have been presenting report to the portfolio committee and on area of financial support and on critical issues that they need budgetary allocation. And in the main, they were attributed to the challenges they're facing with the national treasury. And I think if you recall, we had made commitments as a committee that will interface with the national treasury. And I think it would be important now to be taken into confidence on the critical issues, particularly that have been raised by the Department of Government Printing and the IEC. One of the issues I think Treasury may need to impress on is their attitude towards key priority areas of service delivery that are not allocated more, and that has a direct impact to our constituency of service delivery. And I think if you take impression one on the current bill that is the running of the BMA, which will need massive investment in terms of budget allocation, as Honorable Ross has indicated. In your presentation, you have raised that your concern on the constraints of the department in experiencing an area of filling position. And this has been a matter that the Home Affairs has been raising with the committee, both on the critical positions that are there in the department, including the inspectors who are all over to deal with the to respond to the challenges that our fellow Africans are facing. And the minister has been passionate around that. In fact, at some point they've been giving comparison on the people who are guiding at OR Tambo vis-a-vis the inspectorate that are there. But it also relates to the budget that the department are having. So I wanted you to, the Treasury, to able to articulate properly what becomes your attitude on the critical areas that these departments are facing, which are directly linked to service delivery. Government printing, I think, has been, I think the chairperson is correct, Minister. We may need to persuade that discussion of critical areas where they must source services. I think there are classified information where the department of government printing has to confine without taking them outside the boundaries of their system. In fact, without subjecting them to the issues of the three quotation, but not outstanding that the PFMA has regulated on how proper services need to be done. But what are the attitudes given the sensitivity of some of the critical documents that the state has to classify? The last one, Chair, I think is the issue that is being continuously being raised, which we've been raising to the ministerial, in fact, the department, that in terms of the turnaround time on the issues that are sent to the department for them to address. Because it becomes a challenge when the matter has been raised before the portfolio committee and is being referred to the department, where you have authority over decision process and are not receiving a response enjoy in terms of the process that will be done, so that members of the portfolio committee are able to respond to the issues that are being raised. So those are the critical issues, Chair, that we have been raising it, including the issues of honourable Ross and other issues. So I want to re-emphasise, Minister, that we can't repeat the same thing in all the sittings that we're meeting the portfolio committee. There are two approaches perhaps that will need to view. It's either the submission that the portfolio committee are raising, you tend to undermine the portfolio committee. And that is the approach which I think we're observing at the level of this turnaround time that we're not being, we're not begging to get responses, Chair. We request responses on behalf of the people of the country on the key issues that they are unable to reach the department. But lastly, also to comment, Chair, on the work that has been done by the institution, the government printing works, the IEC, and we need to put more effort in order to resolve some of the issues that have been raised, and the work that I think the department has been raising through the minister and the team. The issue of the briefing of the refugees which are here, I think it will be important as a committee to comprehend the submission of the minister, Chair, so that we communicate one message out of the brief that has been given and out of what the court has impressed upon. It won't be necessary for us as members of the committee to continue confusing the public on the matter that has been properly been clarified to us. We must take counsel from how the minister has presented the briefing so that we take collective responsibility on how the outlook of the country and how both the citizens and the foreign nationals must abide by the laws of the country, and take appreciation on the recent statement that has been raised by the agency of the distinguishing.
Thank you very much. Are you ready? Oh, Treasure. Yes, you can speak from there.
we'll take treasury and then GE, government printing works, then department, in that order.
Honorable Chairperson, and thank you for the question. I do acknowledge that we only make small strides in terms of funding, the funding failure of the immigration program. So I think up to now we just focus on specific projects. So there's an e-border strategy, and there's specific projects linked to your e-border strategy. So we've been trying to fund those projects, which has contractual commitments for this partner. And that is the advanced passenger processing system and the passenger name record system. So we've also just managed to increase this, the compensation of the immigration program, just to address the critical needs of the department at that time. So we've looked at the capacity at Oliver Tambo, and we allocated some money for that, which got a carry-through effect. And then we also increased the compensation with a small amount, which we believe will also be utilized for the immigration function. But the strides we've made is very small. I take note of the comments of the member, and we will look at it in the next budget cycle to make sure that the urgent critical needs, the current issues, are being addressed and funded. In terms of the critical posts, our intention was to look at the uptake of employees in the Home Affairs that can take the early retirement that was made available. So currently, if I look at the MTech presentation by the department, about 900 is in between the ages of 50 and 55, but only 70 of those employees took up the early retirement. So we thought it's an opportunity to look at how money can be freed up in that age group so the money can be reprioritized towards more critical posts. But the uptake was very, very small. So we didn't actually make an inroad there, but we do realize that we need to look at the critical posts that department need to fill. It was very difficult because we can't just look at one department. We have to look at the overall expenditure across departments. And we don't want to lift the expenditure ceiling. We've got an expenditure ceiling. So if we lift for Home Affairs, then we have to reduce the compensation of another department. So I believe that with the fiscal framework and the regulation that we want to implement now, that we can re-look at the ceiling and to see whether we can provide funding for the critical position. Honourable Member, in terms of the critical positions, as you know, I did a slide on what is the critical positions that the department brought to MTech, and it was quite a few. So they wanted us to look at the BMA, the repositioning of the department as a security department, wants us to look at ICT modernization, passenger name record system, the rollout of the ID card, and the PPP project that they currently engage with National Treasury. But this MTech could only basically look at one of those priorities. Because if we sit in a group, in a technical group, all of the priorities of the different departments are basically raised, and all of those cannot be looked at and funded. So we will look again at the next budget cycle to see what of the priorities of the department can be funded. For the BMA, when the BMA is established as an independent authority, the money will move from the Home Affairs to the BMA authority. And also, it will move some of the people that closely link with the BMA from the department those people will be moved to the BMA with the funding. So, which means that we will have to look at the overall compensation ceiling of the department to see, because there's going to be a gap in terms of the funding, because people move with the function. So we'll have to really look at the overall compensation ceiling of the department. So for now, we have provided funding just to fund the critical positions, the top structure. And from there, most of the funding will move from the different departments to the BMA. It will be capacity with the funding will move to the BMA. And that will happen in the different Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you. Government Printing Works.
Thank you, Chairperson, Honourable Members, Minister, Deputy Minister. I'll take the questions for GPW, assisted by Mr. Sengubani and Mr. Tebogoma Morare. Let me take the first one on competitiveness. Honourable Member, when we talk about competitiveness, perhaps my response should be more on the skills and salaries that GPW possesses. The reality is that GPW has seen a brain drain over the years, where we become a breeding ground for private entities and other state entities such as UNISA, South African Bank Notes, and the Reserve Bank, where you attract the resources, they come, you train them, after a while they leave you. It's on those bases that we had to go and conduct a feasibility study to establish what is it that makes us different. Is it because we're not paying sufficient or competitive salaries, or because there's other challenges? And that study serves to actually give us the answer so that we are able to come up with a plan to respond appropriately, especially because government would offer more an all-inclusive remunerative package, whereas the private sector would offer a different package. So we are in the process of establishing those facts so that our budget is actually spent towards the right solutions going forward. I need to indicate that GPW is actually not in competition with the private sector. We are actually a member of the Printing Federation of South Africa. And in that collaboration, we are very conscious and supportive of the government strategy on SMME development as well as LED. And therefore, I've indicated earlier in my presentation that we're trying to collaborate with local suppliers. Part of the Printing SA database is a combination of all the printing companies within the country that are affiliated to that. So when we seek local suppliers, we actually approach them to say, is there anyone who does security printing, and therefore they're able to avail their database to us because we are members. And from time to time, we collaborate with them to make sure that those that we can actually utilize in our services, we do so. So similarly on the polycarbonate as well as the production of paper, we are looking at them to say who was already accredited and established in the market, so that when CSIR concludes their activity, we can be able to approach them for support. So we basically are working in collaboration with the private sector as well as other state entities to make sure that we deliver our services. So our approach is really not cannibalistic. We're also not focusing on commercial printing. Our focus is more on the printing of state security documents. So that's what we are ring-fencing to be able to make inroads in that. I need to indicate that the minister has been our number one ambassador, Chairperson, in terms of requesting departments and entities to come and print with GPW. However, I need to also demonstrate that in the absence of an enabling legislation to help us to ring-fence the printing of those state security documents, that voice remains alone in the wilderness. And therefore, we need entities such as National Treasury and departments, as well as AGSA, to come to the party and say, how do they enable us to continue to sustain ourselves without really boxing us into certain requirements? Much as we would like to comply with the legislation, but we need to make sure that we are enabled and that process is facilitated. So the issue for us is the printing of state security documents such as IDs, passports, legislation, letterheads for ministers, MECs, deputy ministers, the matric certificates, gun licenses, that type of, you know, security documents, and we've been working in collaboration with state security agents to make sure that that classification happens and within the premises of the law. So we're trying our best, and thank you so much for the support we have received, and indeed we'll make sure that we continue to amass the support to continue to exist. I'm going to hand over to Dr. Mamorabe to answer the question on finances, and then Dr. Ngubane to talk to the issue of the paper as well as the polycarbonate plant. Thanks. Over to you.
Thank you, Chairperson. The issue on the delayed financials or financials not delivered. What GPW has decided to do with this matter was to to make sure that during the audit progress meetings, all the branch heads are involved with the escalation of matters that are coming on a weekly basis to address the matters immediately as they happen, as previously we did not escalate matters in that manner. The second matter that we've decided to do was to seek a professional help for technical accounting matters. We had two matters that were mostly technical because it was the first time IFRS adoption for GPW. So we've sought out technical assistance from one service provider which is already delivered. Then the last issue, which was one of the most pressing matters that was coming out of procurement, we have gone back to National Treasury as early as November after the close of the financials, and we met them also in January, mid-January, to engage further on the issue, and they admit that they need to meet us with the Auditor General in one meeting just to highlight that matter because it was one issue that has held us for a long time. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson, Honorable Minister, Honorable Deputy Minister, members, and the House at large. I think I'll just take two questions as indicated by FFCO. The issue of the paper, why have we not sourced paper for so long? If you understand the presentation by our FFCO talking to the fact that we are now moving into the new series of the passport, means that we had to focus on the design of the passport, and paper is part of that design. So it will be difficult to actually start sourcing the paper without knowing or rather finalizing the design, which has to have a security feature of the watermark. However, we're getting close to the conclusion of that security design, which goes along with the requirements from the department as well. And when that's concluded, we can then source the right paper for application. The next question was on the polycarbonate plant. Why have we not started? And when we are starting, you'll understand that polycarbonate is a product, and what we do at the government printing works is to print security features on a card that is already formed. So our plan with this project is to move a step back and do the assembly of the card, which means just fusing, I think, about 9 layers to create a card. However, the capital expenditure that we can estimate at the moment is nothing less than half a billion rand. So for that kind of investment, we then need to ask the question, what is the sustainability of the product itself? Hence, we've engaged CSIR. In fact, last year, we had to do our own internal research to try and understand the sustainability of the passport product, for instance, in its current form, because there are changes internationally when you travel, how countries are now engaging in the electronic kind of product. We are now engaging with CSIR for them to do a techno-economic study because we need to answer two questions. Is it financially viable? Because the current supplier has got volumes throughout the world, but now we're just producing for ourselves. And then the second one is technically. Does it make sense to do this product, to make this product, and also is it not a product that will change soon? So we are highly dependent on CSIR, but we believe it's the right thing to do. Otherwise, we can actually invest the same money into something else. So when we conclude the assessment with CSIR, we'll then plan the project moving forward. And I think for the better part of this year is to actually allow for that assessment, both technically and economically. Thank you.
Thank you. Honorable Minister and Deputy.
Yeah. Chairperson, thank you very much. The question from Honorable Ruas about the budget for the backlog. We need to identify exactly what is the backlog. And there are two issues, mainly. Firstly, the issues of HR, the numbers of people who must deal with this. That's compensation of employees. It comes from the same budget. But secondly, the way the Act was enacted, which you have already said, the fact that, for instance, the Standing Committee on Refugee Affairs has to have five people, with three of them forming a quorum at any one time to hear a case. If you were to do that to the criminal justice system in the court of law, that means have a full bench. You have the same backlog as us. So that has changed. The committee is no longer working like that. It has got five people who are all lawyers, and all of them, each one of them can hear a case. That's why we have developed a four-year plan to try and deal with that as a response to the Auditor General's performance audit, which you have seen. Now, the United Nations High Commissioner for Refugees also wants to come in and help. They said we must present to them what type of help are we sort of looking for. The BMA, I think Treasury has answered it, where the budget is going to come from. Now, the modernization of the six ports of entry, how do we make sure that the private sector doesn't take advantage? Remember that we once presented here thoroughly, the six ports of entry. It's not a South African-only project. It's a cross-border project with other countries. The one with Bay Bridge is even one of the African Union's North-South Corridor development. That's why the President went to report about it. But we don't have money. There's no money in the budget at all to do the one-stop border post. It's going to be done on a concessionaire basis. And the five biggest construction companies in South Africa are already interested. If you knew how the N1 was built between Kranskop and Limpopo, right up to Polokwane, it was a concessionaire of five huge construction companies, Marie and Robert, and what is that, ABWHO, what. They were put together, they put every infrastructure there, and for 20 years, they collect the toll roads and maintain. And only after 20 years, the state takes over. In the case of that N1, it happened from 1996. They were maintaining it. That's why it was always clean by taking the toll fees. So they were not coming to the state. Only in 2016, they put it back to the state. The state believed it would have recovered for that period. So this is how the six ports of entry are going to be done. It's on a concessionaire basis. And they've already formed those consortium. Now, the question about government printing works, competitiveness, what actually do we mean by competitive? I think the acting CEO has already mentioned we are not going to compete with the private sector. What we are asking for here is this. This government, like any other government in the world, has got very important information that's confidential. And a government department goes out to give that confidential information to a private sector to print. They've got our footprint. When there's a state printing works, that can print passports, that can print all the IDs we are carrying. Why can't that can print even question papers for FET? Why can't we print all the other confidential documents of the state? Now, the problem here is the Treasury, I must say. And we are speaking to them because they insist on saying PFMA say competitive bidding. Go and bid with the rest in the private sector. And we are saying it's wrong. We can't be made to bid as a state sector with private sector institutions for work which is done in government. We can't be allowed to do that. I'm happy because Treasury has told us that they are reviewing the PFMA. Not the part about corruption, but the part about it being a compliance-based law rather than a developmental law. That's what we are trying to say. It has to be developmental. Look at, I don't know the number of the slides, Honorable Chairperson, But the slide on financial performance, as Honorable Tito has said, this is one of the few state entities, or at least the only one I know, which get no budget from Treasury, but takes money back to Treasury. It's a self-funding entity. Look at those profits there. You know, these are profits for the year end. These are very huge profits. And we are saying, if this is the case, why can't the, and those profits go back to Treasury to be allocated to other government departments? And then the same government department that has been allocated that money takes it and goes out to a private company to start asking for printing work. Why can't the money circulate around? And, you know, yes, and hire more people and create an entity that can, which is self-financing, but which is also supported by the state. Now, it's quite unfortunate when they say some provinces are pulling out. It's because they are making loss of you know, tender loss, that they say, no, it must end up in the province and all that. So we're asking Treasury to help us. This is a national entity, and it takes money into the national, you know. I'll give an example of what happens with the Department of Public Works. They've got a very, very, very good entity in Silverton, which has used to employ 3,000 people to do hospital pajamas and hospital gear and all that. And all of them were disabled. And it was doing very well with 3,000 people. When the PSMA came, things competitive. It must be competitive and compete with other government entities, because all the provinces were taking their uniform there. You know what happened? Private sector organizations took over, and the NDT lost all the disabled people and left it only about 900 from 3,000. And the rest, where do they go to? They go to SASA. They go to back to SASA. And this NDT used to make a profit of 80 to 120 million per annum and send it back to Treasury. Now, but provinces are no longer. The last time I checked, and I said this publicly and I'll repeat it, it was only the Western Cape province that was still supporting the NDT. The others have moved out. And it was wrong. And so we went back to say, all the government entities must support this NDT, because it's a state entity. It's supporting disabled people. And when you support them, they no longer have to go to SASA. You reduce the SASA budget. Then came the issue, which I think in government printing work is happening. The entity gave me 10 private sector companies, which are used by province, and showed me what they are doing. These 10 are given a tender to supply the hospital pajamas and all that. They take the tender, go to the same entity, the same government entity, and let them produce, and add between 10 and 48%. That, yes, that's what I was showing there. That you look, this province gave this private entity a tender to supply hospital pajamas. This entity came to us. You took it from us. They are coming to us. We produce. And the person who gives the tender is 48% markup. How do we run our economics in our country like that? It's wrong. We are not intending to kill the private sector, but we are saying the state can also have a way to support, because those private sector funds are not necessarily coming back to support the economy. Some find their way out of the country because some of these are multinational companies. The money doesn't circulate here. Now, the last issue from Honorable Ross, it's not the last. The judge, the constitutional court judgment, what happened to children before they are 18 years? Yeah, this one, you know, there are many ways of getting a status in a particular country. This particular one applies specifically to people whose parents were born, people who were born here by parents who are not South Africans, and they've never gone anywhere, and they turn 18. What happens to them? Why is it an issue specifically with them? Because the law says any child who is born by parents who are foreign nationals will take the status of those parents. That's what happens to them before they are 18. If you are born of refugee parents, as long as they are refugee status, you take that status. If you are born of a parent who have been given permanent residence status, you acquire that status. If you are born by a parent who have been naturalized as a citizen, you become naturalized as a citizen as to your parent. You do that until you are 18. At the age of 18, you are regarded as a mayor. You must decide on your own. Do you want to be an American? Do you want to be Congolese? Do you want to be what? What's your choice? That's why they say they must apply. We give them a choice at 18. But when they are young, whatever has been given to their parents, they must live by it. I'm sure the nearest example you know happened in the city of Swan. I'm afraid it's still going to go to court, where there was a war about the lady who has resigned. What people were asking us, what was the status all this time, because she only applied in 2011, yet she was born in 1984 in the former transfer. She has been living under the status of parents. Now when she's an adult, she must come and get her own status. And I'm just giving you that as an example. The last question, Honorable Rules, about the Methodist Church, about it being a social issue. I didn't want to point fingers, but unfortunately you are putting me over to point fingers. If you read this judgment, it's very comprehensive. The judge has covered all the corners. I think the good thing about judges is that, unlike us who are emotional in society or political, because we belong to political parties, they listen to facts in a very calm manner. The judge took all these facts into consideration, and that's why he made the judgment he did. He started with all these attacks on police, all this the issue of counterfeit goods, which was there, which people complain about, the attack on a taxi person who was complaining about drugs. He packaged all of them and packaged the psychology of the nation and said, this is the problem, and made the ruling. Now, you mentioned social development, which is true. There is no law in home affairs which says when people are destitute, they've got no accommodation, women or children, they must be accommodated by home affairs. You are going to slaughter us here, because in all this budget from Treasury, there is nothing like that in our budget. But also our mandate from Parliament, we have not been given any act under which a person who is a foreign national can find residence with home affairs. Is not there, because this country opted for no camps. Yes, we don't have camps. All that home affairs does is to give you documents as to where you are going to stay, who gives you a house and all that. It's not in the legislation. If it is given to home affairs by legislation, let it happen. But it can't be given whenever there's a crisis. Now, social development. There is a JCPS cluster which met when this whole thing was in court and instructed that for women and children, the Department of Social Development has got a budget. And they confirmed that they've got a budget with which to help people who are in distress. The DG of Social Development was then sent here. These meetings of intergovernmental you're talking about have been taking place. And I don't want to point fingers, but I must tell the truth. There's a gentleman here in the city of Cape Town called J.P. Smith or something like that. Every solution you put on the table, he rejects it and throws it back to Home Affairs. Now, the Minister of Social Development complains that social development here in the Western Cape has got a budget like any other province, which they can use for this purpose. Now, that meeting was chaired by the DG of Social Development. He came back crying, because they resisted him and said, no, we've got nothing to do with this issue. Home Affairs National must move. Now, if you listen to the statement made by J.P. Smith, in running away from this ruling, which is very clear, he is saying this will set the precedent. How do you respond like that to a judge and say, no, the judgment you've made will set a serious precedent? He said it will set a precedent because, number one, there are many people who are destitute, who needs accommodation. I agree with him on that. 100% is true. That is like that in the whole country. And they believe if we follow the judgment to the letter and help this one, then there will be an avalanche of people. Now, I can't make a judgment on that. I'm leaving it to the judge, and we'll hear what he says on the 17th. So it is true. I actually even met the premier, by the way, of the Western Cape. I told him that, premier, the problem with this problem is that we are solving it with our political parties as different governments, whereas we are all South Africans. Can't we come together? And he agreed. He said, no, they'll get the DG of the province to chair the meetings because the other is local government, etc. And we so agreed, but then social development here refused and the city council refused. What do we do? Everybody must have a fair share of their work. And their fear is that it will set the precedent. Even in Pretoria, by the way, you are aware that after the court judgment, where they were removed from the United Nations High Commission for trespassing, after that judgment, we had to take some to Lindela. What we did was against the judgment. And why did we do it? Because the judgment was clear that the city must take over. And the task team identified, what is that place, that agricultural place? The Tshwane Event Center. They identified a youth center and said the city council must take them there. They arrived at the gate and the city council closed the gate. They said, no, we've got no place here. But and I'm sorry about what's going to say because it's true. But they allow Bushiri to hold a huge, what you call the everyday, huge set of thousands, but they can't accommodate these women. Then they said, no, I mean, it was women and children because the men were arrested. Then they said, no, there's another place which is owned by the city. They can go and abort there. They drove. When they arrived there, the city closed the gates again. I personally phoned the city of Ikurileni because the city of Ikurileni had already got the place where they were putting foreign nationals who are running away. The city was doing that in Ikurileni, but unfortunately I found that it was full. But unfortunately they told me this shenanigans by the city of Tshwane only at 7 o'clock in the evening. And these women and children have been in the past the whole day, being shuttled from one place of the city to the other, the city refusing. Then I gave an instruction, I said, okay, there's nothing we can do on humanitarian grounds because we can't keep on leaving women and children in a bus. If the city refusing, it's already late at night, I can't go back to the judge who look like crybabies, you know, to the judge who has made a very clear judgment, but the city refusing. I said, open Lindela and put them. And my officials here said, no, Minister, you are wrong. Lindela is a facility which you go when you've been sent by a judge or a magistrate. We don't just send anybody to Lindela. The judge or magistrate must say, yes, this person must be sent to Lindela for repatriation. So he said, Minister, that's in terms of the act. So you can't send these women and children. They are not being repatriated. All they need is temporary shelter, which the city council was supposed to give according to the judgment. I said, no, cut Lindela into two because there's space, and make a special dispensation and put them there. So what we did, basically, was a special dispensation on behalf of the city of Tshwane, which is against the law, and in essence, the money was paid in there. You, as the portfolio committee, have got the right to take us to task, even the auditor general, because we are spending money which is not supposed to be, even the treasury, which was not supposed to be spent by us, but by the city of Tshwane. But they keep on refusing, and it's very convenient because it's easy. These are refugees. Refugee means home affairs. And even members of the public tend to believe that. So I want this issue to be resolved in the way that it was. You said the same thing to Mashaba, the former mayor, when he came here. He wanted Home Affairs to remove people who hijack buildings in Gauteng. Home Affairs doesn't have the way with us to remove people who hijack buildings. It was the job that was supposed to be done by municipality police because they've got metro police, even with subs. Even in the judgment when you check, the judge said so. He said this city council has got metro police. Home Affairs does not necessarily have all those metro police or stuff. That is also in the judgment. The time it takes for resolving issues, please bring me specific issues. Honorable Chaban, I'll also take your question on that, on specificity. If you say it took 8 weeks for us to issue a passport for a South African or an ID, we'll accept it's wrong because our standard is 5 to 13 days. But if you apply for a passport in a foreign mission, that's a different thing altogether. And we're busy resolving it. It's not that we undermine you, because When you apply for a passport in a mission outside the country, you follow DECO rules, not us. That application must come back here in a, what do they call that bag? In a diplomatic bag? Yeah, it must come here in a diplomatic bag. Here. That diplomatic bag, DECO will tell you. We send it only every six weeks. It can't go before that. So even if you make the application today, it won't leave and come back to us until 6 weeks later. The second thing is that they are doing their things manual. They are not connected to our system. We are busy trying to correct that. Now, if that is the problem, bring it to us, we'll inform you. But if you just say the turnaround, it becomes a problem because the turnaround will not be the same for anything, for everything. If you want the turnaround for a certificate, that's 30 days. No, even a day, you know, in the hospital where we have put up equipment, when a child is born, they can go back home with a back activity. We even have a program with health to do that. That the turnaround time for a back certificate is 1 day or 30 days if you get out of the hospital. But other things are out of our sphere of control, like this passport overseas and all that. We are trying our best to bring the issue to us. Others depend on Justice Department. For instance, divorces. People come to us and say, no, we've handed this divorce or I've been divorced, and in the Home Affairs document it's still shown that I'm married. But we are waiting for what you call, for justice to bring us and say there's been so many judgments. We are trying our best to make our system interface. So we'll ask the members of the committee, if you have got a specific issue, bring it to us and we'll deal with it specifically and tell you where it is. Honorable Tito, all right. All we want is other government departments to support this one state entity that is making a profit on behalf of everybody. And yes, the last issue is on the issue of one voice. The voice you have should not be necessarily what I'm saying. This judgment is comprehensive and clear about what the role of Home Affairs, what is the role of the police, what is the role of the city council. That's why I'm repeating. They ordered the cost against the city to pay the National Commissioner of Police, Provincial Commissioner, and Home Affairs on the basis that we had to hire senior counsel, two senior counsels, for a matter that the city could have done alone, and that's what the judge said. So it was punitive cost to say pay these people because they were not supposed to have been brought into this issue on a matter that is purely a bylaw issue. Now, you are saying it's a social problem. Let me tell you how the judge thought it's going to work. He makes a ruling that they must move within 7 days. Home Affairs must process them, but it can't happen in that situation. They said the council must choose a venue where Home Affairs go to process them. After processing them, the city then goes to them one by one with information given to Home Affairs. Try to get who is destitute, who doesn't have a place to go, who says I've got a place in Philippi but I'm scared, and assess exactly whether that is real or not. And then those who are destitute, it doesn't prescribe to the city. It says deal with them accordingly. And what will be accordingly is to go to social development and say, look, these people are destitute. Home Affairs has got all their information. We have reviewed them in terms of the judgment. Truly, according to our review, they've got nowhere to go. We have checked all over Cape Town. Can't you use your social development budget, because it's there, to give them temporary shelter? That's what's supposed to happen. But the city got called feet and said, if we do this, we are opening a can of worms. Everybody who's destitute is going to rush to us. I don't think that's necessarily going to happen that way. So we will hear what the judge says on the 17th, because we'll report to him. I actually asked our lawyer yesterday, and I think it's going to happen today. I said, please write to the city. I'm now writing them for the second time, Chairperson. Write to the city and warn them that the manner in which they are implementing the judgment is not the way the judge has put it. Let them read it in full, please. I have done that, and I can give you the letter I also wrote to Salga about bylaws. Thank you.
Thank you, Minister. If there are questions that are unanswered, we'll send them in a written form. With regard to treasure, we thought that the DG will be here. Because what we wanted to raise in the main with treasure is the funding of the water management authority legislation. But second to that is the issue around the unfunded post and the fact that the department is crying foul that we are unable to do some work because then the post, people are leaving and we are not able to employ people. So one treasurer to take note and know that the Home Affairs Department is not like Department of Education or Health. If somebody gets stranded at Home Affairs, he can't go to a private school or a private clinic. He's stuck with the department, and we'll face this thing from our people thinking that the department is not working. So please say this that to the DG, that these two issues of vacant posts in the department and the Water Management Authority legislation, it's a matter of priority, and we need to fund it and fund it in a manner that is able to take these priorities of the department forward. Minister, I will request one more time that you continue to be an ambassador for GPW. I see because from the last time we were so high in terms of wanting to assist them. There's nothing wrong. We can't. There's no two way about it. There's a huge motivation, a strong motivation that these people are not using the money of the state allocation, but they are bringing the money in. Why would we want them to compete with the small business people on the street? I think we've got to put a balance. But we are requesting treasurer again. The treasurer must look at these regulations on the three quotation. Issue around the issue of GPW. I think that's what we are going to monitor. Honorable Chabane raised a point, Minister, that the turnaround time of the issues that we have raised. I have requested last time that we elevate all the issues and the turnaround time that we have agreed with the department so that we can tick the box in terms of whether or not those things are happening. We know that there is a new acting DG. We hope we'll cooperate with the committee in terms of those turnarounds, because it is those turnarounds that can turn the whole situation of the department around. But other than that, we need to say this, that Minister, we as the committee don't take very light the work that we're doing. And you have an undivided support of this particular committee and will continue to do so, because we feel that we are doing the work on behalf of our people. And we take the work that you do very serious. And the time now is almost 3 minutes late. Any other thing that you want to raise, we'll raise it. Not yet.
When you say there's enough motivation, I just forgot to inform you. You, political parties, demanded the IEC to change the voting method to stop what happened in May this year. They wanted a budget of 300 million from Treasury. Treasury did not have that money. Do you know where that money comes from? From GPW. 300 million. They are the ones who are now funding an election from GPW. Only that the Treasury stopped the money going directly. They said it must be sent to Treasury and go via them. And so it will show as if it's money from Treasury. But it was generated by GPW. So they are going to fund your election. And so what's the reason that government departments shouldn't support them? A structure that even funds elections in this country can't be a smaller motivation than that, Chairperson. I agree with you.
They are going to fund our election, including yourself.
the election. The
election. You need to find our election.
Yes.
Thank you. Okay. Thank you very much. The meeting next week. We will not have a meeting next week. However, we are going to have a cluster. Department of Police has called a cluster meeting. So, part of the agenda, they have called on people who are dealing with water management control and so on and so forth. So, we are highly affected by the meeting that is going to be there next week. So, we will be attending that meeting, and the committee meeting will be the other week. And thank you very much, everyone, for attending, and thank you, members, for cooperation. The meeting stays adjourned.